Welcome to Three Pillars of D&D. I'm Emma.
I'm Jesse.
Hello.
And that's Tyler.
And today on this episode, we're going over the characters we created for the Druid class.
Yes, yes.
In the character creation videos, we each choose a pillar and a subclass and make a class based on those a character based on those parameters.
Yep.
So this time I took exploration, Tyler has combat, and Emma has social interaction. So we're going to start with Tyler, and he's doing the Circle of the Shepherd.
Yeah. So basically, I chose Circle of the Shepherd because I wanted something new and interesting for a combat druid. And, you know, not Circle of the Moon.
So what's the general consensus behind the Circle of the Shepherd?
So basically, it's about summoning and conjuring, creatures to help you, you know. It's like summon bees, conjure fae.
Oh, okay. So it's the conjurer of the druid.
Yeah.
Of the druid world. All right. So let's go over their abilities then.
So wait. Circle of the Shepherd is like the Pokemon trainer?
No.
Okay.
No, more like a summoner.
Okay. So like a gacha summoner. Got it.
Yeah.
You know, you don't like keep the... I mean, some companions, but... No, you don't keep humans forever. They go away after a while. Okay. So, your first ability is Speech of Woods. At second level, you gain ability to converse with beasts and many fae. You learn to speak, read, and write Sylvan. In addition, beasts can understand your speech and gain the ability to decipher the noises and emotions. Most beasts lack the intelligence to convey or understand sophisticated concepts, but friendly beasts to relay what has seen or heard in the recent past. This ability doesn't grant you friendship with beasts, though, and you can mine this ability with gifts to curry favor with them as you do with any non-player character. This ability allows you to, speak with the animals, which would mean you have to be stupid to, you know, if you're getting vacation to talk to the animals. Who would do that? Totally not me. I would never. So, it's mainly a social interaction thing, but also could be used for exploration, like directions.
Yeah, it's one of those little nice things that doesn't have any combat use, and I like when subclasses have non-combat abilities.
And the main point of this and use of this is so you can speak to the things you summon.
That, and it's good for investigating what's going on in an area.
Yeah.
And
then you also get spirits on them. So, starting at second level, you can call forth nature spirits to influence the world around you. As a bonus action, you magically summon an incorporeal spirit to a point you can see within 60 feet of you. The spirit creates an aura and a 3-foot radius around that point. It counts as neither a creature nor an object, though it has a spectral appearance of the creature it represents. As a bonus action, you can move the spirit up 60 feet to a point you can see. The spirit persists for 1 minute or until you're incapacitated. When you use this feature, you can't use it again until you finish a short or long rest.
The effect of the spirit's aura depends on the type of spirit you summon from the options below.
Thank you. Bear spirit. The bear spirit grants you and your allies its might and endurance. Each creature of your choice, any aura, only spirit appears gains temporary hit points equal to 5 foot druid level. Addition, you and your allies gain advantage on strength checks and strength saving throws while in the aura. Yeah. That's pretty good. Temporary hit points is always great. Then there's hawk spirit. The hawk spirit is a summate hunter in your allies with king side. When a creature makes an attack roll against a target in spirit aura, you can use your reaction to grant advantage to that attack roll. In addition, you and your allies have advantage on wisdom perception checks while in the aura. And then, so we have bear, hawk, unicorn.
I like that you can use your reaction to grant advantage to an attack roll. I mean, that can be really important. If you say you have the paladin who really needs to get that big hit off, you could give them advantage so they can get that other super smites off and destroy everything. Same with the, you know, fighter, stuff like that too. And that advantage on perception checks is really good too, in even non-combat situations.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really great. It helps, yeah, non-combat. And then the final one is the Unicorn Spear. Unicorn Spear allows a protective protection to those nearby. Your allies gain advantage on all ability checks, may detect creatures in the spirit's aura. In addition, you cast a spell using a spell slot, there are sort of hit points to any creature in or outside the aura. Each creature of your choice in the aura also gains hit points equal to your druid level.
I mean, it's just a little boost, but hey.
Boost to the boost?
If there's a lot, it's a boost of hit points to each creature in the aura, the 30-foot aura, so if it's all your allies. If you're like, you know, like at least level 5 or whatever, that's 5 hit points to everybody. That can add up real fast.
And higher level. Well, you can really, like, you know, and I mean, no one would ever want to do this, but if you had an army of sugar gliders, you could all heal them.
There you go.
At higher levels, like, all the way to full.
Oh, God.
That's totally not my game plan.
But, yeah, I mean, be able to detect anything that might be sneaking up on you as invisible or just sneaking around really well.
It lasts for a minute, so.
Yeah, it doesn't require your concentration. You can cast it up to 60 feet away, so if for some reason you don't need to be in that area. And it comes back on a short rest, which is also very good, too.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you can use it a little more often, then.
Yeah. And then at 6th level, you get Mighty Summoner, or, And starting at 6th level, beasts and fae that you conjure are more resilient than normal. Any beast or fae summoned or created by a spell that you cast gains following benefits. The creature appears more hit points than normal, two extra hit points per hit die it has. The damage from its natural weapons is considered magical for a person purpose of overcoming immunity and resistance to non-magical attacks and damage.
Well, that's big, because when you get to the 5th to 10th level range, a lot of the monsters you fight are resistant to non-magical damage, and that really makes your summoning creatures a heck of a lot more useful.
Oh, yes.
And where I don't really see any use for this ability outside of combat, it does just kind of lend to the idea that you are a much better summoner. So as a flavor aspect.
No, it's extra hit points, which is always great.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And then at 10th level, you gain Guardian Spirit. And beginning at 10th level, your spirit totem safeguards the beast and fae you call forth with your magic. When a beast or fae you summon or create with a spell as it's turning your spirit aura, that creature gains a number of hit points equal to half your druid level. That's really good.
Huh?
Well, when you get a 10th level, every turn it's in your aura gains 5 hit points back. That's great.
That's up real fast. I mean,
well, that's for 1 minute. So in total, that's, what? That's
10 rounds.
10 rounds, so that's 50 hit points.
Yeah.
Faithful Summons. So in a 14th level, your nature spirit you commune with is protect you when you are at most defenseless. If you're reduced to 0 hit points or incapacitated against your will, you can immediately gain benefit to conjure animals as if you're using a nice little spell slot. So it's 4 beasts of your choice that are challenge rating 2 or lower. The conjure beasts appear within you, 20 feet of you. If they receive no commands from you, they protect you from harm and attack the foes. The spell lasts for 1 hour, requiring no concentration or until you dismiss it, no action required. Once you use this feature, you can't use it again until you finish a long rest.
That's just kind of nice. I mean, you don't actually see that in a lot of abilities, at least that's what I'm familiar with. I mean, yeah, it only triggers when you happen to die, but that's when you need a really powerful ability. You know, like, if you're 14th level and something's taking you out, any little thing is going to help.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I know that conjure animals, but, you know, 4 beasts that challenge rating 2 or lower doesn't seem that good. But depending on, like, what happens, say you got swarmed by kobolds or something, they might be able to help you, you know, finish off the kobolds. I don't know. I mean,
you know, like, you're from that level, unless something, like, really big hits you, most likely you did a good chunk of damage to it. You just need someone to finish them off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they protect you from harm and attack your foes. Depending on what kind of animals they get summoned, and I know that when it comes to conjuring, a lot of it depends on how your DM runs it. Mm-hmm. Do they choose what you summon, or do you choose what you summon? But if the right animals are there, they could probably pull you away from danger.
Yeah.
You know, get you out of the deadly radius things or whatever. I mean, animals are smart enough to figure that kind of stuff out. So, yeah. No, that's cool. I like that. So, what are we going to look for our character?
So, my character,
I'm concerned.
You forgot to give his character a name.
No, so. No, he has a name. I just, my plan was to change it, but honestly, it's too funny.
Is it Jerry?
It's Jerry.
Jerry!
Like Jerry from,
Parks and Rec?
Or Jerry from, Disenchantment.
There's a difference.
Yeah.
It's not just, much of a difference.
Not much. There's a slight difference.
Just Jerry. No, I was using the randomized name on Easy Beyond, and I just get Jerry. J-E-R-I. And I just lose, like... I just start laughing.
You know, just stick with it. I think it's great.
I love it.
And I'm saying this to the camera.
Yeah.
You know. No, I'm just gonna stick with Jerry.
Jerry.
So, to support my, you know, Circle of the Shepherd, I decided to choose Hobgoblin of the Feywild. The main reason I chose this was because Fey Gift. So, starting at, so you can use this trait to you can help actions bonus action, and you can do so a number of times equals your proficiency bonus. You can all extend uses when you finish a long rest. And starting at third level, choose one of the options below each time you take a help action, whether the bonus action or an action. On spillage, you can use the target your help action, each gain number of temporary hit points equals 1d6 plus your proficiency bonus. You can target your help action, each increase your walking speed by 10 feet until a turn, or until the start of your next turn, the first time your target your help action hits a creature with an attack roll, that creature is disadvantaged on the next attack roll it makes within the next minute.
So, yeah, so the best part about, like, one of the weaknesses of the Hobgoblin of the Feywild is if you have no friends, you can't help them. But you make your own friends.
Yeah.
And I just think that's really good.
Oh, that's cute.
And actually, I think the fortune of the many can benefit you as well, though, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I just wanted to cover this one first. So if you miss with an attack, roll, or fail an ability check, or a saving throw, you can draw on your bonds, reciprocity, to get a number, get a bonus to roll equal number of allies you see within 30 feet of you, maximum bonus of +5. You can trade number of times equal to your proficiency bonus, gain all spent uses is...
That's powerful.
Yeah.
I mean, because depending on what kind of summon you use, you can easily get five allies. But even if you just have a couple, a +2 to attack roll, a saving throw, or an ability check is a big boost.
There's, they didn't use correct grammar, and they said, and you regain all expended uses, you finish a long rest.
Oh, when you finish a long, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Ha! Typo.
I just have to point those out.
Yeah.
I also get dark vision.
Didn't the Fey Ancestry give you some resistances too?
It's not just make you Fey. Oh wait, no, you advantage on saving throws make to avoid or have a charm condition on yourself.
Well, that's good.
Dark vision 60 feet.
What proficiencies did you focus on? Or do you think they don't really matter for this build?
I chose survival and perception.
Oh, okay. Just to have them.
Yeah. Let's see, what's pouring good? I have beast spells, so I can cast my spells in my wild shape.
But since you're not since what the highest wild shape you can get is what, like a CR2 or something like
CR1.
That? CR1.
So I'm probably only gonna use it to like turn into an eagle. Giant eagle.
So you can fly above the thing. Or you could change it to an animal to match the ones you summon so that kinda make you blend in, right?
Yeah. So you couldn't know which one was me.
Exactly. I mean, it could be kind of like, you know, Naruto's shadow clone jutsu, you know? I mean, you could even scream that if you want to be a weirdo.
Sadly, I can't do this.
Oh, yeah, I'll probably do that. But okay, so what feats did you end up taking?
My feats are... Mad Magic Adept, I chose a Tennis Spell and Soul Spell, so I don't need to use any Smash and Roll components, and it lasts for double the time.
So what advantages the somatic components have?
Basically, I don't need to make any sound or anything to summon my beasts, so I can just cast them with just focus.
Oh, okay.
And then the, Extended makes it last longer. Double the time.
Well, there you go.
And then I chose, Inspiring Leader, so each, beast, I spent 10 minutes to, shore up their fighting resolve, with a taint, 6 friendly creatures 30 feet of me. I can see or hear you and can understand me. And each creature can gain temporary hit points equals my level plus my charisma modifier.
Oh, because your beast speech ability lets them understand you, so you can use the inspiring leader. So if you're in like a big combat, you can because most of your summons are like an hour long, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So 10 minutes is not going to cut too much of a issue if you have the time to spend on it.
Yeah. And plus, you can always make the big bad guy stop and just have to listen to your speech for 10 minutes. This is great.
She has Warcaster and Resilient Constitution.
Okay, so that basically say you can focus on your concentration. It's really hard for you to fail concentration checks, essentially.
Yeah.
That's really good, really important for somebody.
I never chose the Eldritch Adept Beast Speech. Never.
Not once. Alright. So what was your dump set with strength?
Yeah.
Obviously wisdom is your high.
And constitution.
Yeah. And a little bit of charisma to make your inspiring leader work. Alright.
Yeah.
So, So Jerry, actually, the way that Jerry is spelled there, you could go any routes when it comes to gender, actually. I hadn't really asked you. Male, female, non-binary?
Yes, I totally thought about this one. Mm. Because of how the name is spelled, Jerry is actually female. So. Yeah, I chose the background Outlander, you know.
Makes sense.
Yeah,
I mean, pretty standard Jewish pick. Alright, so, any special equipment that you got?
I have the High of the Feral Guardian, Raw Resurrection, one of the Polymorph, and a ton of figurines.
Oh, okay, that way you can...
Summon
things to help you out on the fly.
Yeah.
There you go.
Each figurine has like a either 5 or 7 day cooldown, so you can't just like use them all the time. It's kind of like a last resort.
Yeah, but in an emergency, you can start throwing out figurines of Wondrous Power.
Yes.
I mean, it's a level 18 character. I mean.
Oh yeah.
It would, for a lot of people, it'd be a little overpowered to have more than one of these, but at level 18, I think like 2 or 3,
yeah,
pretty acceptable, even more, but depends on how you want to use this character. If it was if I had it as an NPC, I'd definitely have it with all these figurines.
Yeah, I feel like in a tight situation, they pull one out, like, you know.
Yeah, they always just seem to have one for the right moment. you know. But I think as if this was a player character, I probably would reduce it. I'd probably make the person choose like two. Two or three.
Yeah, three. I choose. I do.
And, yeah, there you go.
The goats are the best ones. Yeah, Raw and Resurrection, pretty, and one of Polymorph, you know, they do what you think they do.
So, personality-wise, how do you feel Jerry handles those things? Kind of hot-headed, more of a
She's careful in her ring of her, cause yeah, she summons the animals, and she also has a flock of sugar gliders.
Really?
Yep.
Wow, they're adorable.
I want to mention the animal shape spell. Those, my magic can turn, others in the beast to any number of living creatures you can see within range. You transform each target into a form of a large or smaller beast, challenge rating 4 or lower. On subsequent turns, you can use your action to transform affected creatures into new forms. With my, swarm of sugar gliders, I can turn them all into bigger beasts.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that sounds good.
So kind of like having an extra summons there, but not quite. I mean, obviously you use the conjuring spells as the main focus of the druid build. Were there any other spells that really stood out? Like,
no, I have a little bit of healing, a little bit of buff, but mainly it's just the conjuring.
Okay, and then do you think this is more of a lone wolf kind of character, or more of a, it works really well in groups, but can be alone if need be, kind of thing?
I think she really works for herself. You know, she has her friends. She has companions.
Yeah.
She summons them.
Yeah, makes sense.
Like the whole, yeah, this whole thing.
Would you ever play this character, Tyler?
Yeah.
I think for a one-shot, this could be a really fun and flavorful character.
Oh, yeah.
You could really pop out a lot of stuff. Obviously, at high level.
But it'd be fun.
Yeah, but I mean, at high level combat, it was going to be annoying anyway, so, I mean.
Yeah, just such high level, though, forget about combat.
Yeah, I mean, it'll only be about you controlling the action economy. I mean, that's all those summons is going to make you powerful in its own way. So, no, that's kind of cool.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Anything else you want to say about the character before we move on?
No.
Or the class, I suppose. If there's...
I think for combat druid, don't just think of Circle of the Moon. It is the best one, but it's also just one of many options.
Yeah. No, I like this. I like this combat build. It's really cool.
You know, my first character was Circle of the Moon, and it was not interesting at all.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
All right. Well, then our next subclass is going to be the Circle of the Stars. This is the character. This is what I chose this time for my exploration build. Okay, so the Circle of the Stars allows druids to draw on the power of starlight.
Awesome.
These druids tend to track the heavenly patterns and the stars, depending on which, you know, world they happen to live on. They document these things. They follow them. They keep track of them because it's a major part of who they are.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting idea. It's like an astrologist with real powers.
I saw something. You can make a circle of the stars through it. Be like a seafarer, like Moana.
Yeah.
Oh my God! You should have made Moana.
Yeah, Maui would be. Could be a druid in the circle of the stars.
Yeah, he'd be on the shapeshift.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's so cool.
That
you should have made Maui.
I should have made Maui. The character I made was fun though.
You should have made Maui.
Though. I should have made Maui though. Yeah. At second level, when you choose this subclass, you get the star map ability. You've created a star chart as part of your heavenly studies. It is a tiny object and can serve as a spellcasting focus for your druid spells. You determine its form by rolling on the star map table or by choosing one. While holding this map, you have the following benefits. You know the guidance cantrip. You have the guiding bolt spell prepared. It counts as a druid spell for you, and it doesn't count against the number of spells you've prepared. You can cast guiding bolt without expending a spell slot, and you can do so a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus. You regain all expended uses when you finish a long rest. If you lose the map, you can perform a one-hour ceremony to magically create the replacement. This ceremony can be performed during a short rest or a long rest, and it destroys the previous map. Here's some of the examples they use for your star map. You know, of course, if you think of something different, do something different.
Yeah, you could map it on, like, your body or something.
Exactly.
Well, that would be so cool.
A scroll covered with depictions of constellations. A stone tablet with fine holes drilled through it. A speckled owlbear hide tooled with raised marks.
I don't know why it has to be owlbear, but okay.
A collection of maps bound in an ebony cover. A crystal that projects starry patterns when placed before a light.
Oh, that's so cool.
And glass discs that depict constellations.
That's lame. Alright, number 5 is my pick.
These. By the way, what one does your character do?
It is a collection of maps bound in an ebony cover. So that'll come up with my character.
Oh, that's pretty lame.
Well, it's important because of my background. Of why. It had to be something that could be taken.
Star map gives you the map, of course, it's mechanics to give you those spells, but you can also use it to actually navigate your way around.
Yeah.
Because of low social interaction and exploration.
Yeah.
More exploration,
but I think if you took navigation tools, with your characters, I think that you could definitely get double use out of your star map, and that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
So, also at second level, you get Starry Form. As a bonus action, you can expand the use of your wild shape feature to take on a starry form, rather than transforming into a beast. While in your starry form, you retain your game statistics, but your body becomes luminous. Your joints glimmer like stars, and glowing lines connect them as on a star chart. This form sheds bright light in a 10-foot radius and dim light for an additional 10 feet. The form lasts for 10 minutes. It ends early if you dismiss it, no action required, are incapacitated, die, or use this feature again.
Oh wait, I thought you could reflavor this as like tattoos falling up.
Oh, you totally could be able to reflavor it as like your tattoos.
Sorry, I just can't get that analogy out of my head.
Yeah. Whenever you assume your starry form, choose which of the following constellations glimmer on your body. Your choice gives you the certain benefits while in that form. Oh, I see. So you would just put these, starry form as tattoo on your body and then you just activate them like Mally would?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it would be cool.
I'm sorry, I can't get that out.
Oh, no, I totally see it.
Now that we've even talked about Maui, we're all like, Maui, you're amazing.
I was about to do that.
You're welcome. So, the three forms are this. Archer, a constellation of an archer appears on you. When you activate this form, and as a bonus action on your subsequent turns while it lasts, you can make a ranged spell attack, hurling a luminous arrow that targets one creature within 60 feet of you. On a hit, the attack deals radiant damage equal to 1d8 plus your wisdom modifier.
That's a little on the nose.
Chalice, a constellation of a life-giving goblin appears on you. Whenever you cast a spell using a spell slot that restores hit points to a creature, you or another creature within 30 feet of you regain hit points equal to 1d8 plus your wisdom modifier.
Oh, these are all on the nose.
Dragon. A constellation of a wise dragon appears on you. When you make an intelligence or wisdom check, or a constitution saving throw to maintain concentration on a spell, you can cheat a roll of 9 or lower on the d20 as a 10.
Oh, dear God.
Yeah, so, I like these, but I mean, I suppose they're really enhancing something you're going to focus on for a little while.
Yeah, but they're really basic.
They're really basic, but if you think about it, it's just using one of your wild shapes.
Yeah.
Which, you know, unless you're a Circle of the Moon druid, aren't as powerful. So
these two get better actually a lot.
Yeah. And I mean, I like the Era one in particular. Of course, you know, I would definitely, maybe choose, if you're going to really particular, choose like different forms to use, you know.
I would revamp these, honestly. These seem also boring. Like, nothing cool about them.
Actually, I think, well, compared to Wild Shape, you turn into an animal. Yes, you have a lot more options, but animals aren't that complex.
I know, but every single anime that ever has an archer, the archer has one super move that makes this arrow glow, and I just keep getting those vibes. It's like it's not good enough. They're just trying to be too flashy with it, and it's not. I don't like it.
I like it, and you're wrong, and I'm right.
Well,
I don't.
If you want to make, if you want to mix things up, and you want to be an edgelord, make yourself change the archer to a darkness arrow, and have it do, you know, necrotic damage instead.
Or you flavor as like using lightning bolts.
Yeah, something like better than an arrow. My God, you can do anything on your body.
Yeah, I mean, if
you choose that.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a Greek themed one, yeah, you could have like a tattoo of Zeus, and then you get a lightning bolt that you hold and you hurl it instead.
As you can tell, audience, we're gonna be mentioning tattoos a lot.
Yeah, well, they say they appear on your body, so you know, even so, it'd just be a constellation pattern. I mean, if you're looking for like good examples, that the Theros book has a lot of like what gods look like in constellations and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And some of there's like these special versions of some of the magic cards of the gods that are just constellations. They're really cool. Of course, you know, anyone with star charts has lots of examples from our own constellations. Yeah. So you can do a lot with it. And
anything cooler?
I think that's something that's definitely worth homebrewing, you know. If you can come up with three different things that are more interesting.
And fit your character better.
But remember, these are kind of low-level powers. You don't want to make them too powerful.
Yeah.
You get this now, at level 2.
Yeah, you want to make them flavorful, but don't make them too strong.
These are actually really good, I think, you know.
I would keep, like, all the dice points and stuff, like all the hits and
like a D8 of damage or a D8 of healing or
reflavor it.
Yeah.
Oh God, it's ugly.
Well, but you can always do that with D&D, so don't worry.
I really like the dragon one.
I feel like I would use the dragon one way more than the other two.
And see, I think the dragon one is probably the one I'd use the least myself.
But it gets really good at later levels as well.
Yeah.
Why do you think you'd use it least?
I just don't think I focus that much on concentration spells.
If you have a high enough concentration, you basically, unless it does like a ton of damage, you can't really fail a constitution check.
I mean, yeah, it certainly helps. So I don't know. I'm with you. Later levels of the game, I'd probably use the dragon one more often.
Yeah.
Okay, so at level 6, you get the Cosmic Omen. Whenever you finish a long rest, you can consult your star map for omens. When you do so, roll a die. Until you finish your next long rest, you can gain access to a special reaction based on whether you roll an even or an odd number on the die. So the two abilities are called, one is called Wheel, which is for even. Whenever a creature you can see within 30 feet of you is about to make an attack roll, a savings throw, or an ability check, you can use your reaction to roll a d6 and add the number rolled to the total.
That's a real hard word.
Yeah. This is woeful, too. Woe, which is odd. Whenever a creature you can see within 30 feet of you is about to make an attack roll, a savings throw, or an ability check, you can use your reaction to roll a d6 and subtract the number from your from the total. You can use this reaction a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus, and regain all expended uses when you finish a long rest. Once again, I love that, because if I'm not mistaken, this one's from Tasha's.
I think it is.
I love that they're tying more things to proficiency bonus. I think they really need to go back and do it like an errata on a lot of the older ones and tie more things to proficiency bonus.
Yeah.
Because it really helps you scale.
Yeah, it doesn't increase by that much, but it does increase.
It does increase.
Like, I make it break something.
Like, you know how the Barbarian gets, like, extra damage if you do, like, a strength attack?
Mm-hmm.
It goes from 2 to 4. I think it should scale up proficiency bonus.
Yeah. I think they could take a little more hit from that and, I don't know, make some changes. But it's hard to change a lot of things in print, so I kind of get why they don't.
Yeah.
So with Cosmic Omen, you know, because you can use it not only for attack rolls and saving throws, but also for ability checks, this can be very good. Like, you can help get use your omen to help you help a teammate, you know, make that climbing check or something like that. You know, you can point out, oh no, use that handhold instead. You know,
yeah.
You gotta make sure you play up the flavor of it and really make some explanations for it, but this has its real nice uses outside of combat as well. And even if you have people pursuing you who aren't necessarily attacking you yet, you can have them fail some, you know,
yeah,
ability check or whatever as well. I mean, that I like that there's a little more flexibility with that, and that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Click on Constellations. The constellations of your starry form improve. The 1d8 of the Archer and the Chalice bonus on the Chalice become 2d8. And while the dragon is active, you have a flying speed of 20 feet and can hover. Oh, wow. Moreover, at the start of each of your turns, while in your starry form, you can change which constellation glimmers on your body. Oh, so you can really just mix it up, use that full use to your wild shape. To really adapt to whatever you need at the moment. The character I made doesn't go this high, so I didn't really focus on the higher level abilities.
That dragon one just gets so much better.
Yeah, fly speed and a hover especially is really nice. And then at level 14, you get full of stars. On your starry form, you become partially incorporeal, giving you resistance to bludgeoning, piercing, and slashing damage.
Wow.
That's kind of cool. I mean, yeah, it's 14th level, but it's a little late to get a level 1 barbarian ability. But at the same time, you know, hey, you're a druid. That's just kind of cool. And it makes sense. Like, it's just another enhancement on top of that starting form.
Because
you really want to, you know, get outside, get outside that box. And you're right. I think if you were to homebrew some things up and maybe change your form so they match a theme for yourself a little better, it could be a lot more fun. But they're good guidelines. They're good starting points to help you figure out where to go from there.
Yeah.
So
now we're going to move on to the break, and then we'll talk about this character and then mine.
Welcome to Realms of Peril and Glory, an all-new actual play podcast.
There are guided tours once a week. Come on, Dark Brennan.
How about you filthy timepiece?
RPG is home to hilarious stories.
The thing that kicks off a really good tale is...
when they take their tops off.
Sorry?
When you're reading, like... Don't worry.
And thrilling adventures.
There's bad guys, there's an ogre. Probably best if you stay here. Sorry, I'll be back soon.
Why am I tied up?
That was your sibling, not me. Bye.
Each season is an all-new actual play story told collaboratively at the table, featuring guest players from the Magnus Archives.
I remember being in the water, and that was awful. And now I'm not in the water, and that's... much better.
Wooden overcoats.
I am a snowman. I have one job, and that is to stand in place. I was doing that very well.
Yes, and she might come back 9 times more powerful with lots of food and kippers.
We fix space junk.
On the surface, you might look different, but you're very, very similar inside. And I can vouch for that.
And more.
What I am about to tell you stays in this room. Got it?
I don't happen to know where there's, like, secret plans about meat and smoothies.
Ducks! Did you say ducks? Did you say duck?
You can find Realms of Peril and Glory wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're gonna have a good laugh, then we're gonna possibly cry, and then we'll grab dinner.
All right, so welcome to the sellout break. Okay, I want to announce that the winner of our contest was at Steph Can't Be 7. She, you know, won her copy of Candlekeep Mysteries on D&D Beyond. And hopefully she has fun running that with her group. And she had mentioned that she was going to take some new players through using some of those, little quests as like one shots to help teach them the game and stuff. So, yeah, glad to get more people involved. And
D&D.
And she's been real positive and helped spread the word of the show, which was the overall point of the contest. But she went above and beyond on top of that. So I really appreciate that.
Yay!
So, yeah, so cool. Speaking of which, if you want to catch our contests, you can follow us at Our Dorky on Twitter, Our Dorky Family on Instagram, and you can also email us at any time at OurDorkyFamily@gmail.com. You can use all three of those platforms to ask us questions, suggest show ideas, tell us what you think, you know, anything. Any feedback is good for us, so, yeah.
Yeah! I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah!
They can't see you anyway.
So. They can't see me, but yeah! I have goofy signs right now, folks.
Alright. Anything you want to bring up? Turtles, squirrels, monkeys?
Hello.
Alright. Well, that's it for our break, so.
Yeah!
Hello. All right, so now that we're back from the break, I'm going to talk about my character. My character is Niori, a Hexblood.
One of the UA races.
Yeah, one of the new UA races from the Gothic lineage. So the idea behind this character was that she was... recruited to be a replacement hag, for this hag coven. They focused a lot on, they had their own star maps and stuff like that. They were more of like a divination kind of style, witches coven. And basically the idea is Niori just basically stole their star charts and ran away because she didn't want to be a hag. So she's trying to, she's basically on the run, and which makes for a fun character, in my opinion. So, so that was one of my main starts with that character.
I don't want to be a hag.
Yeah. Cause that's one of the, that's one of the things they bring up in the Hexblood detail pages is one of the examples. And I kind of went with that and ran. So,
just like Maori did with those star charts.
I don't know why, but Maori sounds like a drag queen name.
I swear to God, I've seen Maori as like an actual anime name.
Like, what feat do you take?
So, I went with the ritual caster of a wizard. I know that you can do find familiar as a druid, but I thought it was a particular important.
But
you can use a wild shape to cast find familiar once a day, for the length of time you'd be wild shaped. But I thought that the ritual casting, because of the fact that, you know, she'd been part of the coven.
Yeah.
So there was some ritual casting in there, and then.
So your dump strat is strength and intelligence.
Yeah, I went with a fairly high wisdom and constitution. Yep. So.
You're a haunted one. Yeah, I think that could be a good way to describe about being kidnapped by X.
And being pursued by them all the time. Yeah, so there's a lot of focus on Arcana and, was one of the skills I really focused on that. So basically, what the idea behind this druid is to be like kind of like part witch. the Hex Blood kind of suggests that as well. To make sure I had Inferno and Draconic, to touch more on that wizard and demon Inferno in this pass with, the Hags, so. Lawful neutral for the alignment, I really wanted to make sure, that she had her own code that she kind of follows mm-hmm. and does, but since the overexposure to the Hags and everything like that, she's not really, it's not easy for her to go with good. She goes with what's necessary. I mean, it's really an escapist kind of life, you know. She's constantly on the run. Sometimes she has to do some things that are kind of iffy, in order to survive.
What is her code?
Well, I mean, she's real big into the stars. She really does believe in them. And, you know, mostly she wants to survive. So I went with lawful neutral. And the idea is that while she may have to do some things that are not always good or evil, her main focus is that she wants to stop the Hags. She wants to stop the Coven from hurting anybody else, but she also needs to, you know, stay away from them and escape. So that's her main goal, and that's what she's going to focus on. So she's not going to let a little thing like good or evil get in the way of eliminating this threat. And that's what she's going to focus on overall. And it's a little hard, but you know, she's probably not going to, obviously not going to hurt children or other things like that. So.
Just the Hags.
Yeah, just the Hags is the main thing, but, I don't know. There's a little bit, but it's kind of a loose alignment. She might fall more in the neutral
yeah.
category with leaning towards lawful.
Neutral is really hard to do.
Because of the Hex Blood, I want black hair, purple skin, you know, the eyes, I made one gray, one black,
Oh, what's that called?
Why are short?
Yeah, I went with very short,
oh
very
my
light.
God!
Less than 30 pounds.
Yeah, less than 30 pounds, oh, 2 feet, 5 inches, 19, so she's real small, like, really falls into that kind of fey
so deal. So she's small in this picture.
I made sure that I really focused on the paranoia aspects of this character. She, you know, I like the idea of her reading and memorizing poetry to calm her down and to repeat snippets of poetry to like help her deal with the anxiety of being hunted.
Oh, I love her!
And, you know, she's also kind of always afraid that they'll somehow figure out a way to convince her to become a hag. So, she's always constantly worried about that, like, always on that edge.
Oh, you're gonna make me cry!
And then, of course, every day she has certain rituals that she's gotta follow. You know, she always looks at her chart, she's always reading her omens. She does that really ritualistically every single day, which makes sense, you know, with the circle of the stars. But like, it's really just a fundamental part of her character. Even though she didn't have those abilities, she'd be doing them anyways. So
I relate so hard with this character, and I hate you for it. To the equipment.
You have a necklace, an adaptation, bag of holding, hellfire dagger, and plusman shield,
and a broom of flying.
Yeah.
So, I really wanted to play up that witch feel. Of course, the bag of holding, if you're going to be on the run, you need to have a bag of holding. And the necklace adaptation, that's the one that lets you do, you can, like...
invisibly in the environment.
Yeah, so you can make it through cloud kill and seeking cloud effects, and breath weapons and such. So, yeah, I just wanted to basically... she's focused on survival over anything else and escaping the power of these Hags until she can gather the power she needs to hopefully stop them. So that's the whole idea. I definitely would play this character. I think it would be a lot of fun to play this character.
You're kind of a really good DM though.
I think it would. The DM would have to do a lot of work, so you'd want to find the right DM to run it. I think you could do that one.
Not me.
You could.
Not a good DM, Emma.
Yeah, this is definitely a story-based character. So, because this is an exploration character, and that was a real big focus, I had the Broom of Flying and the Necklace of Adaptation so that she can get anywhere and escape, while also trying to get into places that can help get her the power she needs. Extra magic items or whatever it is that is going to help her overcome these hacks. When I chose my spells for this character, my cantrips, I think, really helped kind of emphasize some of the points. Like I chose Infestation, Primal Savagery, so that you can, grow claws and claw people and stuff like that.
Why do you have that cantrip? I would never take that cantrip.
I know, right? Then eventually I try claw and I can rip my fingernail out, throw it in their face.
And then scratch the inside of your eyeball.
Yeah. And then Thorn Whip, because I don't know why you wouldn't take Thorn Whip.
That's just something.
I just love that spell.
I don't really get the appeal, but okay.
It's a spell that I love.
Let me look at it real quickly.
Read it out loud.
So the reason why I love Thorn Whip is whips have a 10-foot reach.
Isn't it 30?
You can pull creatures up to 10 feet closer to you, and as you level up, it gets more powerful. After a while, what's the point of using it any kind of weapon as a druid?
Yeah.
When you can just use a Thorn Whip.
Actually, it's a cantrip. You said 10.
It's even better than I thought it was. It has it's a 30-foot whip. So, it's a 30-foot whip you can use to pull enemies closer to you if need be, if it's larger or smaller. And it does piercing damage, and it increases in damage as you go. I just love the spell. I love everything about it. Of course it wouldn't be good if you were, multi-class as a fighter or something like that with extra attacks. Because it's a cantrip. But I love everything about it. And especially with the Hexblood Druid, it just really feels quite appropriate. It's kind of vicious and powerful. And I like it. I also like Fog Cloud, protection from evil and good to deal with the constant hag attacks. The other ones are there, but they're not really important. But those are the spells that I think really point out, really epitomize what this character is about.
Why is your character to have conjure animals?
I was kind of go for good spells. I think conjure animals is a good spell.
Eight beasts challenging 1/4 or lower, that's so good.
Yeah, I mean, when you need a distraction, conjure animals is there for you.
Yeah, that's a good one for you. You can summon a dire wolf.
See?
You know how good. You summon two dire wolves.
Yeah.
Two is better than one.
See? I mean, your character focuses more on the conjuration stuff. So, of course, your character can be better at it. But, as part witch, it was just one of the many things that just felt like a real good combination for this character.
It was a really good concept. Part witch druid.
So I thought it was fun to make. So that's kind of what I was. And like I said, I definitely would love to play this character if we were doing one shot. Honestly, if a good one shot, I could upgrade this to any level. I think I enjoyed it, so I don't really care. Even at lower levels, I think it'd still be a fun character.
Oh yeah. Okay, it's my turn. I want my mushrooms.
All right. So for our social interaction. Character and subclass. Emma, you're gonna be doing yours?
Shrooms!
Alright.
I'm very tired. Okay, I chose Circle of the Shrooms. Spores. Shrooms, spores, whatever.
No, Circle of the Shrooms. That's what it's called now.
The toadstools.
So what's the basic consensus of this?
You eat subclass? Mushrooms to get bigger.
That's Mario Brothers.
I know. Druids of the Circle of the Forest find beauty in decay. They see mold and other fungi and the ability to transform lifeless materials into abundant, albeit somewhat strange, life. These druids believe that life and death are part of a grand cycle, with one leading to the other and then back again. Death isn't the end of life, but instead a change of the state that sees life shift into a new form. Druids of the Circle have a complex relationship with the undead. Unlike most other druids, they see nothing inherently wrong with undeath, which they consider to be a companion of life and death. But these druids believe that the natural life, that the natural cycle is healthiest when each segment is vibrant, changing. Undead that seek to replace all life with undeath, or that try to avoid passing to a final rest, violate the circle that must be thwarted.
So they're not, so the circle of spores aren't necessarily evil, they just do the world differently.
Yeah.
So classes are like necessarily evil.
No, yeah, these first appeared obviously in Ravnica.
Yep.
And it's based on the Golgari.
Yeah. Or they appear in the Anthars.
And then, Yeah. And then they, they got reprinted in Tasha's Cauldron of Everything.
Oh yeah.
No,
you're right.
So they kind of extended it out. And I'm glad they did, because I really didn't think that that needed to be just a Ravnica thing at all.
Although it does fit Ravnica, though.
Oh, yeah, Ravnica quite well, but...
I do think putting it in Ravnica originally was the right idea, but I am glad they opened it up.
So at level 2, you get your circle spells. Your symbiotic link to fungi and your ability to tap into the circle of life and death grants you access to certain spells. At second level, you learn the Chill Touch cantrip. At 3rd, 5th, and 7th, and 8th level, you will gain access to spells listed for that level in the Circle of Spores spell table, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, it doesn't count against your spells prepared, blah, blah, blah.
Blah, 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 blah. Spellcasters, blah, 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 blah. I don't know much about them.
Okay, so, read the spells.
So at 2nd level, you get Chill Touch. At 3rd level, you get Blindness, Such Deafness, and Gentle Repose. 5th level, you get Animate Dead and Gaseous Form. 7th level, you get Blight and Confusion. 9th level, you get Cloud Kill and
Contagion.
Contagion.
Condentation.
Shut up. Contagion. Hail of the Spores, 2nd level ability. You are surrounded by invisible necrotic spores that are harmless unless you unleash them on a creature nearby. When a creature you see moves into a space within 10 feet of you, or starts its turn there, you can use your reaction to deal 1d4 necrotic damage to that creature, unless it succeeds in a constitution saving throw against your spell save DC. Then necrotic damage increases to 1d6 at 6th level, 1d8 at 10th level, and 1d10 at 14th level.
On one hand, it's free damage, on the other hand, it's so little.
But it's so cool! I love this one.
Yeah, I mean... and one of the other abilities are based on this one.
Yeah.
And how it works. But, I do like that the damage scales up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's used in your reaction. How often do you use your reaction?
Never.
Anyways. So, it's just a way to do a little free extra damage.
Yeah. If you decide to multi-class into Rogue, or if you're a Minotaur.
But, yeah, most things use your bonus action. This uses a reaction, and I just kind of like that it spreads your action economy around.
Yeah. I feel like this is very social interaction, because you just have invisible spores around you all the time. And, you know, like, somebody, you could just say they're not invisible, and somebody could be like, oh, you have spores around you. Well, that weird. And yeah. This is cool. I think
you could flavor it up in different ways if you wanted to as well. You could, you know, like you could state that there's a smell,
yeah.
Like a natural smell around you. You can make that either sweet or sickly, depending on how you want to flavor
sickly
it.
Sickly sweet. Oh.
Yeah, I mean, you can do a lot of different things with it, because, you know, that sickly sweet smell especially is kind of indicative of, like, rotting flesh and such, so.
Yeah.
You could do a lot with it to really make it your own.
So, also at 7th level, you get Symbiotic Entity. You gain the ability to channel magic into your spores. As an action, you can expend the use of your Wild Shape feature to awaken those spores. Rather than transforming into a beast form, and you gain 4 temporary hit points for each level you have in this class. While this feature is active, you gain the following benefits. When you deal your Halo of Spores damage, roll the damage die a second time and add it to the total. Your melee weapons attack deal an extra 1d6 necrotic damage to any target they hit. These benefits will last for 10 minutes, until you lose all those temporary hit points, or until you use Wild Chip again.
Alright.
Wow, I think that's an interesting way to use your Wild Chip.
Yeah, basically, I mean, you're going to do that extra d6 in necrotic damage, and, you know, necrotic damage is not easily resisted, so, I mean.
Remember, temporary hit points don't stack. Don't do drugs, kid.
Don't do temporary hit points, kids.
I just thought that remember, and that, like, the way it was phrased just made me think the don't do drugs, kid.
Yeah. Alright, next.
So at level 6, you get fungal infestation. Your spores gain the ability to infect a corp and animate it. If a beast or a humanoid that is a small or medium dies within 10 feet of you, you can use your reaction to animate it, causing it to stand up immediately with one hit point. This creature uses the zombies that block in the monster manual. It remains animated after 1 hour, which after time collapses and dies. In combat, the zombie's turn comes immediately after yours. It obeys your mental commands, and the only action it can take is the attack action, making one melee attack. You can also use this feature a number of times equal to your wisdom modifier, minimum of once. You regain all expended uses of it, and when you finish a long rest.
Yeah.
And see, if I'm remembering correctly, Dumpstat has a zombie template you can throw on things. And I would probably use that instead. Add the zombie template to whatever it is you animate to make this, A, a little bit better. Mm-hmm. And B, to make it, like, feel more natural.
Zombies aren't that powerful. They're only, a fourth of a challenge rating.
Yeah. So, you need to be careful with the DM. I think you could say, like, you can't use this on certain things that have a higher, CR rating. So you don't allow your druid or the spore to be too powerful. But I still think adding the zombie template to
On higher mod, because no matter what you animate, it uses a zombie stat block.
That's what I'm saying. I would say you can't use this ability on something with a CR1 or higher. Otherwise, we're gonna have to scale its abilities down, because otherwise you're gonna make it too powerful. The idea is you're supposed to make a quarter CR zombie. You're not supposed to make a super powerful thing.
Yeah.
But
okay, I think we're misunderstanding. No matter if it's even if it's a friggin' giraffe, but even if it's like something really powerful dies, if it comes back this way, it will be a zombie with a 1/4 challenge.
And I'm suggesting that you don't do that, and instead you use the zombie template on top of it instead.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay, because what sounds like you're doing is it sounds like you think that the more powerful it is, the more powerful it comes back using this ability.
No, yeah. But if you use the zombie template, that would be true.
Okay, so I'm not familiar with the zombie template, so I was confused.
Yeah, it's just, it adds the zombie abilities on top of whatever the creature already is, and takes a bunch of other stuff away. It's kind of complicated, and I wouldn't do it unless it was really interesting.
Yeah.
Are necessary for the combat, but there might be times as a DM that I would go out of my way to zombie template something.
Oh, yeah.
To make it A, more useful. I mean, it's a 6th level ability. A quarter CR zombie is kind of boring, but you know.
That's extra damage.
It's extra damage. It's there. Either way.
So at 10th level you get spreading spores. You gain the ability to seed an area with deadly spores.
So as basically what Dad does every time he farts.
So as a bonus action?
My joke wasn't that bad.
if I wasn't the dad here, I'd say you just dad joked me.
Honestly, I think he just dad joked you better than you dad joked us. The king of dad jokes in this family, ladies and gentlemen. I said, I know you like say dad how now? I said, ladies and gentlemen.
No, he's not a dad now. Don't sleep in the shed.
There you go.
Don't get allowance.
All right.
What is your job?
So at 10th level, you get spreading spores. You gain the ability to seed an area with deadly spores. As a bonus action, while your symbiotic energy feature is active, you can hurl spores up to 30 feet away.
All right.
Where they swirl in a 10-foot cube for 1 minute. The spores disappear early if you use this feature again. If you dismiss them as a bonus action, or if your symbiotic energy feature is no longer active. Whenever a creature moves into the cube or starts its turn there, the creature takes your hail of the spores damage unless the creature succeeds on constitution saving throw against your spell save DC. A creature can take this damage no more than once per turn. While the cube of spores persists, you cannot use your hail of spores reaction.
So basically it just moves your hail of spores to a distance.
Yes. I love it.
Alright.
So at level 14, fungal body. The fungal spores in your body after you alter you. You can't be blinded, deafened, frightened, or poisoned, and any critical hit against you counts as a normal hit instead, unless you're incapacitated.
So, this one's kind of interesting, like, the not getting a critical hit thing is nice.
I just feel this is like a weak gaps ability.
Yeah, but it is, like, they all seem to be kind of weak when it comes to druids overall. Yeah.
They do.
This is one of the weakest class, or subclass, in my opinion.
It is, but I love
it. It's the flavor.
It's the flavor for me.
So was there anything about this subclass that really tied into social interaction for you?
I love, like, I think my character's 15th level, so, like, she gets all of these abilities.
Death hippie.
Yeah.
Exactly. It was mostly about what type of character I wanted to go for.
Yeah.
And I'll talk about that in, like, a minute.
Yeah.
But, like, I get lots of social interaction from this, because, like, as a DM, you can homebrew this to make it, like, the spores smell. And, like, they smell either really good or really bad, and it'll bring people to you or against you. It can impair a lot of your social interactions with, like, just how you smell. Or, like, maybe you look weird. And, because of the spores in your body. And, you can use that, especially, like, the 14th level ability caught my eye. It really did.
Yeah.
Because I reflavored that as a way where spores are coming out of your body. And that's just, you would not, if you were a human and you saw somebody walking around with spores on their body, would you or would you not talk about that?
No, that's true. Like, I suppose, when we think of social interaction, we usually think of things that make you more sociable.
Yeah.
But this actually does the opposite. It makes you a little less sociable. But that's important in social interactions as well. Like, people are tend to be more afraid of you as a general rule. And fear is just as powerful as
you know, trust.
As trust and, yeah, inspiration and such.
And so I think this is an interesting character for, like, a veteran. Like, somebody who's been playing D&D for years and years and years and years. I could not play this character for, like, 5 more years. Just saying. This is a very difficult character.
Oh.
I would love to play this character, but I don't think I could play this character well.
That's not that hard.
But, like, taking the character I made in just this class and using it, like, against you to kind of make it so, like, you have to be favorable to people or, like, people don't like you and so you're always, like, really against that. It's interesting. It's cool. It'll make the flavor of your role plays better, and just the social interaction, it's not even just social interaction in your game. It's social interaction with your partners.
There you go.
That's what I was
All right, well, so let's go into the character then.
Yeah, let's talk about your character in general. So, let's cover first the race. What's your
race? Well, who is she and all that stuff too?
Oh.
My character is Allah. Queen, quote, of the spores.
She ever claims that she's the queen, yet, like, everyone, all the zombies are like, yeah, she's a faker.
There's actually a giant story behind it. I remember all of it, except how to say the one name.
Alright. So, Awa, Queen of the Spores.
Awa, Queen of the Spores, is a forest gnome. And I love her. You'll see when you, if you like download the sheet and stuff, she has a goth Princess Peach profile picture that's custom. Did not make it, found it on the internet. I don't know who it is. I'm sorry. It's just for D&D, it's fine. I mostly went goth Princess Peach spores combined to make Awa.
Yeah, be careful when looking up goth Princess Peach on the internet. There's a lot of not safe for work versions of that.
You might want to put the safe filter
on.
Yeah,
so put some safe filters on before you look that up.
Please.
But it's a really, it's really
so
cool image.
It's so interesting. Like, you see all the pictures and stuff and it just gives you so much inspiration.
Although Google does a decent job of filtering.
Generally, but just so everyone is, just so everyone understands, you want to make sure you throw on a filter. but either way, go into it.
So I'm gonna go into her story first, and then we'll talk more about things. As a child, Awa didn't have a name, first off, was abandoned at, this cave, at, the entrance of this cave. Myconid takes her in, because they actually, looking up this, type of people, it was really fun. They don't talk to others. They actually don't have speaking skills at all. They communicate using, their brains. If they can speak into each other's brains, and that's how they communicate. And they really don't have, a royalty system. Everybody's equals. There are, there's, the one, grandpa bee from, the generation before that lived on. That, everybody listens to and, gets advice from. But, they're all equals.
So why did they bring this little outsider in?
Because Myconids are friendly creatures. They brought the little outsider in because they saw she was abandoned. And as stated, they're gentle creatures. They like to help others. They will happily help others. And when they're not being hostile to them.
Yeah, I had a D&D choose your own adventure book, and that book, Mike Nitz, were really helpful.
Well, there you go.
I expect that to be a joke. Oh, why don't you guys laugh at me?
So they took her in because they saw she was abandoned as just a child, little baby toddler, Awa. Named her Awa. She was the only one who would actually speak to any outsiders that asked them for help. So I changed her story up a lot. There was three different phases. Really.
Yeah.
And this is where the story goes three different ways. And you can change this story three different ways.
This is just a phase, Mom.
It's a story phase.
The first one was she was outcasted. She felt outcasted by the Myconids because she was different, obviously. And that they didn't accept her, so she left on an adventure. Another one is that she was sent on a diplomatic mission for the Myconids because they wanted to make peace with somebody, and she was the only one who could talk. This is the one that I mostly went with. And the third one was the crazy proclaimed she was Queen of the Spores, and they kicked her out, and she's still crazy bonkers. Really loved this one. Couldn't pull it off very well. If you can pull it off, please do it.
That'd be fun. I don't think I could pull it off, but you could pull it off, though.
Yeah.
You already act like you're the queen of the world.
It would be kind of like the queen from Dagmar.
Yeah, Queen Dagmar. I was looking for Queen Dagmar vibes from Disenchanted.
Yeah, from Disenchanted.
Queen is better.
What's that?
Queen is better.
Yeah.
But I couldn't really get, myself to pull up this character that I grew to love over, the course of 10-20 minutes. I love her. Talk about her all the time. And I couldn't pull her to make her crazy, so I went with the second one. But I would love to see, the third one being used. Or, even the first one.
Alright. So, the second one, which one's that again?
The diplomatic mission one, she was the only one who could actually speak with outsiders.
Okay.
She understood their language.
So, so you focused on proficiencies and abilities.
Yeah.
And languages, so you could, so she could be a diplomat for the Mycetids.
Yep.
Okay.
And she was proclaimed queen of the spores by, everybody else.
Yeah, not the Mycetids, but everybody else.
Yeah, the Mycetids are like, good person. And everybody else is like, the queen!
Yeah.
So everybody else is crazy.
So it's a misinterpretation.
Yeah.
From everybody else. Okay, that makes sense. Alright. So were there any special feats that you took to accomplish anything like that? Or?
I don't think so.
You went with alert?
I did go with alert. I remember this now.
Alright, and then you also went with... ability score improvement. Okay. And then ability score improvement. Okay. So you so alert was the only feat that you went.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I see you over there.
And then, what was her dump stat then?
What is your dump stat?
Is it strength like everybody else?
I don't think so, actually.
Nope. It was intelligence. Okay. Yep. Oh, because she didn't really have a formal education.
Yep.
So she had to learn.
Also, she's crazy.
Well, no, that's not the third
crazy.
One.
That's the third one. Second one. She's diplomatic. She doesn't have formal education, so she's really, like, bad with words. She's like, that thing over there looks pretty. And it's just,
she's a higher charisma or, like, than a pretty flower. I find that interesting. But you said she came off weird to people.
She does come off weird to people, but she doesn't act like she's dumb. She knows what she's talking about, but she doesn't know the words. That's what I was going for. That's why her dump stat is intelligence. That's why her, like, wisdom is 13.
Yeah, but you increase all these.
I increased a lot of these. Just,
yeah.
I think they all are just about equal now, because she's a higher level character. But if you play her first level, or like second level even, her dump stat is intelligence. And that's because she has, like, kind of this, in my mind, like, a big period where, like, she's learning these different words and what they're meaning, and, like, she's still, like, going through that little, like, toddler phase we all go through because she just came with formal education.
Yeah, but obviously you made her focused on being a diplomat first.
Yeah.
Druid second. I mean, the spores just kind of came as part of who she was, not necessarily as abilities that she was, like, going out of her way to develop.
Yep. It just kind of became her. Her description.
She's a noble?
I give her the noble one. She was queen.
Yeah, like, she has a nobility, like, in a way, she's a noble. It's an interesting
perspective. Although she's not an official noble, she is still noble in most people's eyes, other than the people she rules over. So she is...
You guys should love lawful neutral, right?
Lawful neutral, yeah. She does carry on the tradition. She is very peaceful. She does not want to fight. Which I think is an interesting character concept. I love playing those characters that are like, don't enjoy fighting, but are like strong enough to defend themselves.
Well, if she's peaceful, then why isn't she good? It makes her not good.
Well, it's more about the... It's about the what's good for the Mycetids.
Yeah, it's good for them mostly. Because they do get hostile once you make them hostile. They are not a weak people who are just submitting it themselves. They will get hostile and they will defend themselves.
But, like, what?
So that's kind of like the tradition, the personal code that she picked up from them.
Why can't it still sound good in nature, though?
They are good in nature, and that's why she's good in nature. She's a lawful person. She sticks to her traditions, which are the Mycetids traditions. But, she will, like, sometimes she will bend the rules when it comes to human rules and laws. They have different laws and traditions, so that's why
she is. Lawful neutral is a hard alignment.
It really is.
I still feel like your character is more lawful good, but that's just me.
I gave her the Aristocat, 10 piece of minimum, like...
Aristocrat. You said Aristocat.
Ta-da!
Okay, so basically when she's on her diplomatic missions, she really plays up the nobility kind of thing.
Yeah, nobody takes her seriously as a temple rat. Yeah. She's like, I have to be noble.
Yeah, because if she goes as a dirty, smelly, spork person, everyone's going to not take the Mykonid seriously. Mm-hmm. And so she puts off this air of loyalty.
And she has, like, I do want to talk about more, like, the flavor. I did talk about a little over, like the spores on her body. Her physical characteristics, she looks a lot like Goth Beach, if you look up that picture. Whew, I love her.
On the filter, yeah, then look it up.
Yep.
But on the filter.
When you said Aristocat, all my mind just went to, I just took a DNA test. Turns out.
You know. Can you, click on physical characteristics?
Let's see.
So she has blonde hair, she has sickly pale skin with spores growing out of her, like, in, like, her, like, arms and, like, her neck and, like, the cracks of, like, her body and just, you can place these spores anywhere.
Yeah.
Really. I wanted to go into more details about where they were, but D&D Beyond, for one,
doesn't has give you a lot of space for that.
Word limits. And two, I thought it would be really cool.
Loop it in other.
Yeah, you can add it to the
I can't always section. Add it in others, but I was like, I thought that would be nice. She has purple eyes.
So what was her height again?
3'4".
3'4", okay. Alright.
So the spells don't really correspond much. I went for more of a stronger spell suit because I knew she would have to be getting in tussles and things like that. So the spells don't matter for this, like, pillar.
Why is there female in quotes?
I don't know. I don't remember. I do know Mycenids don't have genders.
Okay.
That's probably why it's in quotes, because she doesn't probably actually know she's female.
They put a lot of research into this.
I did! I was so proud of myself for this. I love Mycenids now, and I want a race, please, D&D Beyond. I need one.
I don't know how well that works as a playable.
I know it wouldn't work very well, but I would need it.
I still think that'd be fun. I do think it would work.
They would have to differentiate the Mycenids from, like, the playable ones to the ones that you see. Please?
Alright, so is there anything else on the equipment or anything else about the
character? No, I have two equipment.
Okay.
That's
so,
for combat and exploration type equipment.
Was there anything in the personal bonds or anything like that were important? Okay, so overall, basically, she's intended to be more of a diplomat.
Yeah.
Do you think that this is more of a playable character or more NPC or either?
NPC.
And either. Playable, I would change things up, but playable, obviously have a better equipment and actually look at her spells. I just kind of click the random spells.
Yeah.
Because none of them seem to really be what my character needed.
Yeah, I mean, as a druid, you can change your spells every day.
And so this diplomatic character is very much more an NPC, but if you want one of the different routes, like that I talked about, the crazy one, that would be fun to just see as an NPC or as a player. Playing that character would be a blast. I would roll through that character like no tomorrow.
I think it'd be fun in a one shot. Like, if you did it for too long, it might get annoying, but one shot's a perfect
time. Crazy doesn't have to be cackle, cackle, I'm mad, I'm gonna kill you all. Crazy can be a small, silent crazy. You know, like the Karens. You don't know they're crazy until they do something.
Karen, queen of the spoils.
You should change your shame a lot to Karen.
Yeah. But definitely the first route that, like, my first phase that I did of this character.
What was the first phase again?
Very much an outcast, left the Mycenids, because she wanted to be an adventurer and see something else.
She needed to expand her possibilities.
So she's a teenager.
Yeah.
But that was more of a playable character. This one more like an NPC, and, like, the third one can be either. So I actually gave a lot of, like, vagueness to this character. Because I think there's so many different ways you can take this character.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, for sure.
Yeah, I'd play this character very teenager-esque.
The crazy one, the teenager who wants to just leave on her own, the diplomat who accepts her role and just helps people and is very kind. Oh, my God, I love Allah.
So, that's our episode on the our characters we made of the Druid class. If you liked any of these, want to comment them, let us know. We like your ideas.
I would love to see, like, the different variations you can take, especially on, like, the spell tattoos.
Yeah, I mean, I know, now I kind of wish I'd made Mally.
Please, you should've.
No, but I like my hex blood. I like my witch druid.
I love your witch druid.
If we did that project we were talking about, I might take a Mally.
There you go. So, either way, see you next time.
See ya, bye-bye.
Bye.
Hello.
Dear God.
So first we'll start with Tyler.
Hello.
After the first we'll start with Tyler.
After the break. I love my intro.
We're doing the break right at the beginning.
All right. So music.
Oh, you're gonna keep that in now. It's great.
It's certainly gonna make bloopers.
Blah. Just you looking over me like, bleh.
Bleh. All right.
I can't help it. So, 10th level job. 10th level job. I'm going to cry.
You put your crying pillow down, little girl.
So,
you broke your sister again. I know it's easy. You just go poof and two breaks, but. And that's how he got dad joke boy.
Yes, you're the fun guy. We are the fun guys.
Fun guys. Hey, it's my guys, the fun guys. They're gonna come kill ya, you know what I mean?
Again, I really hope that's a quote.
It is not.
I dropped that thought. What if a character of your size and weight were one or was a barbarian and was thrown by a giant, bigger barbarian? So just like rage while being thrown in the air at someone. So just like a super, like a barbarian bullet.
And you name the person Fire. They could be a fireball.
Fire turned into a ball!
Yeah. And then it'll be like, my barbarian cast fireball. Just castings of...
Blizzard, don't lick it!
Hello.
When your guys, your go-to hairstyle to be cute doesn't work anymore because of the aesthetic you accidentally chose. I can't do my side ponytail!
Why not?
It looks stupid.
Well, yeah.
I mean, we're looking at you.
I'm running away!
Come back! We love you.
I just had that thought, sorry.
I'm going to have to throw myself into the sun real quick. I'll be right back.
Yeah. That's going to be a great blooper.
Cat fireball!
Anyways.
Yeet!
Night?
I'm sorry, your mom, Karen's mom could go in the background, just threw me off.
Oh, I know, she's probably watching that Tiki Talkies again.
Oh, don't say them like that!
Tiki Talkies?
Oh, good. I'm sorry, I'm gonna go throw up real quick.
The TikToks? You don't like when I talk about the TikToks?
I prefer Tiki Talkies.
I like Tiki Talkies. I like Flippy Floppies.
Flippy Floppies. That's really cool.
Yeah, oh, I'm going to throw up. No, excuse me.
A flippy phone.
A flippy phone.
Yeah, 50 the pancakes.
What, honey? It's not like I'm talking about the Facebook.
The Facebook.
I'm leaving.
The Facebook.
Or the Twitteries.
Stop!
That's so funny.
What is that? I'll kill you.
Why is that?
I know.
Oh my
it's
God.
A fictional character.
Dude, let me cry if I need to. You cried when what's his face died.
Oh? Attack has that sad book.
Yeah!
Oh, freaks him out. Oh, that was it. That was a really sad book. You have to, I feel emotional connection with that character.
You cried. He's a fictional character. So
yeah,
shut up.
Learned about this character less than 5 minutes ago.
Shut up. Did you cry when Spider-Man turned into dust in Endgame? Infinity Wars?
No, I did.
I did too, don't worry. Don't worry, honey, I did too.
Alright, so...
Hi.
It's
how are you?
Voice crack things.
Now let's get back to the show.
Alright.
So now we're talking about the Twitterers.
Twitterers.